Hi, welcome to the Hungarian Living Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Szabó-Voss. Our goal is to discover, celebrate, and share Hungarian heritage and encourage you to do it too. We'll touch on food, travel, history, music, and language, and share stories from our listeners. We're glad you're here. This is a podcast where we'll encourage you to dig deeper to learn about your Hungarian heritage in a variety of ways. We'll have thought-provoking conversations and share resources. So whether you know a little or a lot about being Hungarian, this is the place to be. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Hungarian Living Podcast. Today I'm talking with Andrea Tordai about the Hungaricums of Hungary. Welcome, Andrea. It's great to visit with you again.
Hi, Liz. It's great to talk with you again for me too.
So let's talk about Hungaricums. What exactly are they and why are they important for Hungarians?
Oh, yes. It's an interesting topic. So according to the legal definition of Hungaricums, they represent the highest quality of Hungarian product with its characteristically Hungarian attributes, uniqueness, special nature, and quality. So Hungaricums are important for the Hungarians. We are proud of them. Once Hungarian kingdom was a big country, so Hungary was a big country, a significant power in the middle of Europe. For today, as we have lost two-thirds of our territory after the First World War, we have become a small country. But millions of Hungarians live outside the current borders and in the neighboring countries or anywhere in the world. So the value that the so-called Hungaricums represent, they converge all the Hungarians living around the world, and it helps to preserve the traditions or traditions, I think.
Yes, and I think it helps people stay connected.
Yes.
And proud. So
I agree.
Hungaricums are things that Hungarians are proud of as a country and as a people, and they are unique to Hungary, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and then what are the different categories of Hungaricums?
Yes, six different categories have been determined. These are the followings. So, agriculture and food. For example, palinka, red onion of Mako, they belong in this category. The health and lifestyle, the Béres drops belong to this category. You remember, we have visited the Béres wine region. Mm-hmm. It's owned by the Béres family in the Tokaj wine region. Built environment, it is the third category. For example, the Zsolnai porcelain and ceramics factory belong here. We also visited this place. It's located in Pécs, in a town in southern Hungary, near to the Villány wine growing region. So the fourth category is the cultural heritage. For example, the Mohácsi búsójárás, the búsójárás of Mohács, the masked end of winter tradition belong here. Or for example, the Matyófolkár embroidery, which is world famous, and also the world-known and renowned life work of Ferenc Puskás belong to this category, cultural heritage. The fifth category is natural environments. For example, the long-tailed mayfly and its spectacular swarming belong in this category. And the sixth one is the tourism and catering. For example, the karcag mutton stew, or the dobos torta, dobos cake, and the goulash soup belong in this category. These are the six categories, yeah.
And we'll talk about a few Hungaricums today, but in the future we'll talk about some others as well. So one of them that we're going to talk about today is the Kötös kalács, which is also known as a chimney cake. We have several places in the U.S. where we can get them now, which is very interesting. We have some stores, places in malls or food stores that sell them, but we also have several food trucks that sell them. So I actually have a podcast interview with Steel City Chimneys, and they make Kötös kalács, and they're from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. So it's a great topic to talk about, and I'm glad that it's a Hungaricum because they are very unique. And they're very delicious. And I love that they are now at least a little bit accessible in the USA. So yes, back to Kötös kalács.
Yes, it's a proof yes. that it's really delicious.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely.
But we can call it a barbecued dessert. Yeah. Today it's a very popular Hungarian street snack, really. The chimney cake has a perfect crisp exterior and a soft inside, making mm-hmm. the most delicious dessert for us. Originally, it is coated in sugar, but today we coat it with cinnamon, nuts, coconut, or even it is filled sometimes with ice cream. Maybe you have tasted it.
I have tried it, and actually, I like it better when they're separate from each other than together. Yes. A kutis kalach is a dessert all on its own, and it doesn't need to have ice cream to enjoy it.
I agree. Because I told you that it's interesting that even they create it today, they make it in a very different, a very colorful way already. So its origin is from Transylvania. So it is celebrated as the oldest pastry in Hungary. So the first written record dates back to 1679 was found in the village of Uzdi, St. Peter, today in Romania, in Transylvania. So the first recipe appears in a manuscript cookbook dated in 1781. Earlier, it was a festive treat, a festive dessert. Now it is part of our everyday life or everyday consumption.
Wow.
So
kurtos kalács, that's how you say it, right?
Kurtos kalács, yes. Kurt, it means horn, actually. But they call it chimney, translated it chimney cake.
Okay. All right.
So, and the next one is the halas lace we would like to talk about. Hungaric. It belongs to the cultural heritage category. So, lacing has more than 100 years of tradition in Kiskun halas. Halas lace, it's called. It is a small town located in the area between the Danube and the Tisza rivers in the middle of Hungary. The halas lace is a type of needle lace. It first appeared in 1902 in the town of Kiskun halas. This type of lace making is very consuming. It demands 100% manual work, done with the snow white, very very fine thread and an almost invisible needle. The secret of halas lacing is known only to the halas lace workers. So the unique technique of lacing is passed on from generation to generation, and that knowledge is used by excellent folklore industrial artists of the lacing house to create wonders from thread in Kiskun halas, in the town of Kiskun halas. Even though the technique is 118 years old now, new motifs are still applied in the laces each year. So the tradition is mixed with the values of the present. So the halas lace work is not only a work of art, but also Hungary's ambassador in the world. Lots of international excellencies and aristocrats received halas lace work as a gift from the Hungarian state. A few of these unique artistic pieces are owned, for example, by the Japanese Empress, by Elizabeth II, the British Queen, and also the wife of the US President Bush got it as a gift. John Paul II also received halas lace work during his visit to Hungary in 1996. So, and it's interesting that we will visit the lacing house and museum during our folk art and culinary tour next year in September. So,
yes, and it's a beautiful place, and the work is fantastic. Yes. It's very detailed and very intricate and very beautiful.
Yes, we have visited before on our tours already with you. Yeah.
So in the realm of nature, for one of the other categories that deal with nature, can you explain what is special about the long-tailed mayfly at Tisza Lake?
Yes, and its spectacular swarming. Yes, so we call it Tisza virágzás, or if you translate, Tisza blooming. So every year from late spring to early summer, a natural spectacle transforms the Tisza River. So people come to marvel at the flowers blooming on the river's surface, millions of long-tailed mayflies. So rising in huge clouds, they take flight, reproduce, and perish all in just a few hours. So it's very difficult to know the exact time. The local fishermen and ferrymen, local people know from their long-time experience when the mayflies would appear, but it's quite difficult to include in a program, in a tour, right. as we can't plan the time and place, we have to wait very patiently. So it's really difficult to catch it.
Yes.
But it's extraordinarily beautiful.
When you can catch it. Yeah.
Yes.
That'd be neat.
It's a.
But yes, again, hard to plan. But it is a part of the Hungarikum.
Yes. Yes. It's a rarity in Europe as well. Yeah.
Okay. So now, of course, we have to talk about goulash soup. I don't ever get tired of eating it. And I love that it's served in the little kettles in many places. It's served in little kettles, but also that it's cooked often in the big kettles. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes. So everybody visiting Hungary tries this excellent meal once. That is a must if you are a tourist in Hungary. So it's one of the national dishes of Hungary, and maybe we can say it's a symbol of the country. So traditionally, this soup is cooked over the open fire in a cauldron. So it's normally served as a starter or a small lunch, but it can be a main dish together with fresh, white, homemade bread. So the goulash is a soup of meat and vegetables, seasoned with paprika and other spices. Its origin traces back to the 9th century to stews eaten by Hungarian shepherds. At that time, the cooked and flavored meat was dried with the help of the sun and packed into bags produced from sheep's stomach, needing only water to make it into a meal. So earlier versions of goulash didn't include paprika, as it was not introduced to the old world until the 16th century. So the name originates from the Hungarian goulash. So the word gulya means herd of cattle in Hungarian, and goulash means herdsman, or we can say for Americans, cowboy. So goulash refers both to the herdsman and to the soup, the word goulash. From the Middle Ages until into the 19th century, the Pusta was the home of massive herds of cattle. Thousands of them were driven to Europe's biggest cattle markets in Moravia, Vienna, Nuremberg, Venice. So the herdsmen made sure that there were always some cattle that had to be slaughtered along the way. Sure. The flesh of which provided them with their goulash meat. So goulash can be prepared from beef, veal, pork, or lamb. Typical cuts include the shank, shin, or shoulder. As a result, goulash derives its thickness from tough, well-exercised muscles, rich in collagen, which is converted to gelatin during the cooking process. So meat is cut into chunks, seasoned with salt, and then browned with sliced onion in a pot with oil or lard. Paprika is added, along with water or stock, and the goulash is left to simmer. So after cooking for a while, garlic, whole or ground caraway seed, or soup vegetables like carrot, parsley root, peppers, and celery may be added. Other herbs and spices could also be added, especially cayenne, bay leaf, and thyme. So diced potatoes may be added as well. They provide the goulash thicker and smoother. However, red peppers and potatoes are post, as I told you, 16th century additions, unknown in the original recipe. So only from the 16th centuries. Okay. So add also a small amount of, some people add a small amount of white wine or wine vinegar at the end of the cooking to round the taste at the end a little bit. So goulash may be served also with small egg noodles called cipetke. The name cipetke comes from pinching small fingernail-sized bits out of the dough. So that the cipetke means in English pinch, actually, before adding them to the boiling soup.
Okay.
This is I can tell about the goulash soup.
All right. And last but not least, let's talk a little bit about Puskás Ferenc, who is very well known even in non-Hungarian circles just because of his athletic skill. So let's talk a little bit about him.
Yes. So Ferenc Puskás, he was a Hungarian football player or soccer player, as you say in America, in American English. And he was a manager, widely regarded as one of the greatest players of all time and the sport's first international superstar. So he scored 84 goals in 85 international matches for Hungary, played 4 international matches for Spain, and scored 514 goals in 529 matches in the Hungarian and Spanish leagues. So he became an Olympic champion in 1952 and led his nation to the final of the 1954 World Cup, where he was named the tournament's best player. He won 3 European Cups, 10 national championships, 5 Hungarian and 5 Spanish Primera divisions, and 8 top individual scoring honors. In 1995, he was recognized as the top scorer of the 20th century. So wow. I have read this because there are so many medals and so many data that I can't remember, but you can experience, you can see that he was really
a phenomenal
person. Yes.
And where was he from?
Yes. You know? Puskás started his career in Hungary, playing for Kispest and Budapest Honvéd teams, football, soccer teams. In 1948, he was the top goal scorer in Europe. During the 1950s, he was both a prominent member and the captain of the Hungarian national team, nor as the Mighty Magyars or the Golden Team, you may heard about them. Mm-hmm. So in 1958, 2 years after the Hungarian Revolution, in 56, he emigrated to Spain, where he played for Real Madrid. So in 1962, Puskás took Spanish nationality and played 4 times for Spain. 3 of these games were at the 1962 World Cup. In Spain, he was known as the Booming Cannon. So it was his name. Mm-hmm. So after retiring as a player, he became a coach. In 1993, he returned to Hungary and took temporary charge of the Hungarian national team. In 2002, the Népstadion in Budapest, the People's Stadium, was renamed Puskás Ferenc Stadium in his honor. So the biggest football stadium, yes. He was also declared the best Hungarian player of the last 50 years by the Hungarian Football Federation in the UEFA. UEFA Jubilee Awards in November 2003. In October 2009, FIFA announced the introduction of the FIFA Puskás Award, awarded to the player who has scored the most beautiful goal over the past year. So He got the nickname Öcsi or Buddy, we can say in English, still in the 1940s in Hungary. So we called him Puskás Öcsi most of the time. So, and he died in 2006 of in Hungary and pneumonia. He was 79 years old. So in a state funeral, his coffin was moved from Puskás Ferenc Stadium to the Hero Square for a military salute. And he was buried under the dome of the St. Stephen Basilica in Budapest in 2006 in December. Wow. We can talk really, we can talk, and mainly the man can talk hours about him, about his tricks, his goals, his matches, but really there is no time for it. And of course, I'm not a man, so I'm not a football fan. I'm not a football fan, but I'm sure that my husband can talk hours about him.
Aha. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for spending time with us today, Andrea. And we will include a website that lists the Hungarikums in English in the show notes. And we will be sure to talk about Hungarikums again and explain a little bit more about them.
Of course.
The show notes can be found at HungarianLiving.com. And we will catch you next time.
Yeah, it was a pleasure for me to talk to you again.
Thank you. Hungarian Living is a division of Magyar Marketing, the Hungarian store, where you can find meaningful gifts with Hungarian style. Check us out at MagyarMarketing.com. And special thanks to Stephen Cicek and the Animal Cannibals for the show music. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Hungarian Living, please subscribe and share this podcast with your favorite Hungarian. Check out our show notes for links to resources mentioned in this episode. If you have a question or comment, email us at podcast@HungarianLiving.com. We'll catch you next time.